had also fortune. She had also fortune of 500 pounds.
Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. This weekend marks the 27th installment of the Dublin Irish Festival. It's a three-day celebration of Irish food, drink, and culture, and lots of music. You just heard the song Roger the Miller. That's from the Irish band Slide. And I recently sat down with a member of that band, Mick Broderick, who's also a member of another band called the Rambling Irishmen. He'll be performing at the festival this weekend with the Rambling Irishmen. And Mick's music has been described as traditional Irish music with attitude. And in our interview, we talked about how much Irish music has changed and evolved over the years. And I asked him what traditional Irish music even means in a modern setting.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's such a broad spectrum of music, really, from the very traditional to the more experimental. So, you know, it's hard to you know, there's so many different categories within Irish music, within Irish traditional music, that it's very hard to say any one particular thing is what Irish music is about. But for me, you know, it's I suppose, first and foremost, it's the, you know, the melodies, the tunes. If you're playing the tunes and the melodies and you're singing the songs, then you're playing Irish traditional music. After that, it's just a case of how you choose to express your music and your musicianship. A lot, some people, you know, they stick to the very old traditional styles of playing, and they may not necessarily even add guitars or bouzoukis or drums or bass or anything, and you've just got a pure melody. You know, and a fiddle player playing a traditional Irish tune on his own is Irish traditional music. Equally, a band who are up there with keyboards, bass, drums, well, you know, you some people would say that's traditional Irish music too. So it really depends on, you know, how you want to go about it. But I think within the music, there is a huge broad thing, but there's also license to do whatever you want to do with the music. And that's important too. And it's important to be pushing the boat out and for the music to be growing. You know, in the same way as language, there's new words and new vocabularies that keep a language alive. I think it's important to do the same thing with music, you know, to be trying new stuff out. And but equally, it's important for the more traditional musicians to keep that end of things going too.
When I think of traditional Irish, Irish music, I think of a lot of acoustic stringed instruments.
Yeah.
And I know that you play bouzouki, which isn't really popular in American music. How is that instrument different than an acoustic guitar?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's part of the lute family, like mandolin, ukulele, that kind of thing. Guitar is part of the guitar family. So a bouzouki is more similar to a mandolin in that the strings are tuned up in pairs, doubles, you know, and the tuning is more similar to mandolin, standard mandolin tuning. There's just one string is tuned differently. Even though some bouzouki players will tune it exactly like a mandolin, EADG tuning. But it's a Greek instrument originally, and it only made its way to Ireland in the 1960s. So it's one of the relatively new additions to Irish traditional music. So, you know, we come in for abuse now and again by the traditionalists, but I think they're coming to accept us.
How would you describe Columbus as an Irish music town?
I would say, you know, I'd say it's in its infancy. That's the way I see it. And I think that if you compare it to dance, Irish dance here in Columbus, and you see the number of dance academies, and you see all the kids all around the city learning Irish dance, you even have people competing at the national level, at the World Dance Championships in Ireland, and winning, you know. You compare that to music, and there really is very little music here. There's a couple of bands here and there, but what I'd love to see, in actual fact, now that you mention it, is somebody starting a music academy and teaching kids around the city Irish instruments, with the aim of in 20 years' time having students or kids going over and winning in Ireland. They do it in Chicago, they do it in New York, they do it in Boston. I know there's a bigger Irish community up there, but if you can do it with dance here, you can do it with music. So, like, there's one session in the Claddagh on Front Street on a Sunday evening, and there's a single other session in the week. You know, pubs don't know what to do with the Irish music session here in Columbus at the moment. So really, there's very little happening. There's a band called the Drowsy Lads. They're great. You know, they're keeping music out there. There's a couple of other bands like the Kells and this kind of thing. But really, you know, I think there's more potential for music here, to be honest with you.
Actually, every time I think I've seen the Drowsy Lads, after the concert, I'm more excited for everybody just pulling up a chair. It seems like half the crowd has brought an instrument also.
Yeah.
Is that an Irish thing or is that just kind of their thing?
Well, I think, it's Irish, but, you know, you find it in bluegrass. I think any kind of folk music, I think it's a strong part of any folk music. You go to some of the Eastern European countries and, you know, like Bulgaria, Romania, where folk music is very strong. You go to India, you know. There's a thing called a session, and it's just really a gathering of musicians who share their repertoires of music. Because in a traditional pool, there are tunes that, you know, standard tunes that most musicians will know and will play together when they get, and it's like a jam. So when they get together, they just want to play together. So that's the nature of folk music a little bit. So when the Drowsy Lads finish the gig, you have a lot of people watching the gig who know a lot of the tunes they're playing, for starters. And then after the gig, there will be so many tunes. I mean, there's hundreds, there's thousands of tunes out there. But, you know, all they want to do then is just have a jam afterwards, and they get a chance to play, and the Drowsies will play with them, and, you know, it's a good night. Yeah.
This weekend, we're having the Dublin Irish Fest here in town.
Yeah.
Are you performing this weekend?
I am, yeah. Most years now I've played with Slide. We must have played 5-6 times at the festival. This year, I put a different band together for the festival. Slide, are 3 of the 5 are based in Ireland, and they're popping out sprogs. That means they're having lots of babies, getting married, you know, so that the band isn't the touring machine that it once was. I put a band together called the Rambling Irishmen, and that's a really good singer, Danny Burns. He's living, I think, up in Delaware or Baltimore somewhere. We've Matt Mancuso, a New York-based fiddle player. And then a fella I shared a flat with in Dublin, Ireland, called Tommy Martin. He's living in St. Louis now. He plays with Celtic Woman. He plays Illan pipes and whistle, flute, you name it. So 4 of us are going to get up there and lash it out.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. And that was from a conversation I had earlier this week with Mick Broderick of the band The Rambling Irishmen. And he's performing at the Dublin Irish Fest this weekend. We'll have links on our website to the festival and Mick's performances. Right now, I'm joined in studio by Cindy Funk. And Cindy is the host of WYSO's The Deer Green Place. It's a show about traditional and contemporary Irish and Celtic music. And Cindy also hosted Shamrock's Heather and Roses on WYSO in the 1980s. Cindy, thanks for coming in.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks very much.
Tell me about, since we don't get WYSO here, tell me about your show.
I try to stick to the traditional music, but sometimes, just like Mick just said, sometimes the traditional song can be updated, and sometimes you can write new material, but in the traditional mode. So if it sort of hits my ear that it sounds right, then I just pick it, and it can be something that was written last week or something 200 years ago.
You hosted your show in the 1980s, and then you took some years off, and now you're back on the air. How much has changed in the Celtic and Irish world scene from then till now?
I think more people know about it. Before, you had to have to explain to somebody, you know, well, this is not Celtic music like basketball. It's Celtic music. And but now, after, I really think the big tip-off over here was the stage show Riverdance. There was a lot of controversy in the folk music community about that, about how it was going to portray the music and portray the history. And I think it opened a lot of windows and a lot of ears to listening. So now people want to see the dancing and they want to hear the music. So I think it's done a real big favor for the traditional Irish and Celtic community.
If somebody's listening and wants to find out more about just how to find good Irish and Celtic music, what would you suggest?
Oh, gosh, there's so many ways. Back when I was doing that previous show in the 80s, everything was little catalogs you had to order from and wait for. And now with the internet, it's everywhere. You can actually, a lot of artists are still on MySpace and on Facebook, and they're everywhere, really. Just, I don't know, it's you can search for anything and find anything. So it's easier now.
So we're hosting the Dublin Irish Festival in Dublin. And it seems to me, I've noticed that in the past 10 years or so, a lot of people are embracing their Irish heritage, however slim a percentage it may actually be. Are you noticing anything in the, like, are you noticing more festivals, more bands showing up?
Oh, there's lots more Celtic festivals. But no one celebrates their heritage like Americans. We can be more German than the Germans. We can be more Irish than the Irish. The first big festival I ever walked onto was the one up in Wisconsin. And the first person I saw was a guy with those dealy boppers on his head, big flowers on springs. And I thought, oh my God. But no, everyone who has the littlest bit of Irish in them, or especially, I've got one guy in my history, but a lot of people who have no Irish at all can go out to a festival and be as Irish as they want to be.
And what is it about Irish music or Irish culture that people really can latch on to?
The music is certainly something. It's as all folk music, or most folk music, it's the story of people and their personal stories. I went here, this happened to me, and this is what I have left. Or and like bluegrass, most of the songs are sort of sad, but there are happy ones as well. But there's something about the stories that come across that really get people.
And when we talk about Celtic music, we immediately think Irish, but there's more to it than just Irish music, right?
There are seven Celtic nations, and Wales, Brittany, Ireland, Scotland, and some others. I don't remember right now, but there's music from everywhere. But in my show, I play English music as well. So it's Celtic, but then the English guys aren't. So, but I like their music as well, so I put them in there too.
Are you a musician yourself?
I play folk music. I was in a band for 22 years called Sweetwater, but we've been disbanded for a while. But I play dulcimer, auto harp, tin whistle, a little bit of boron.
So do you remember how you initially were introduced to Celtic music?
There was a program on WYSO by Phyllis Brzezowska, and it was called Celtic Folk Weave, and I listened every single week. And then when it came time to, I thought, well, I'd like to do a show. She was gone, and I'd like to do a show in WYSO. And I asked, you know, about a different kind of music show, and they said nope. But about a year later, they called back, Cindy, could you do a Celtic show? And I said, yes, I can. And so that was really it.
And with Irish music having blended with so many different styles lately, I'm thinking of the theme from The Departed, the band The Dropkick Murphys, who are punk rock, really heavy stuff. Do you ever have groups send you in heavier or crossover music? I know there's even
occasionally.
I know there's even Celtic rap now.
Oh yeah, there's everything, and I don't go to the really rocky stuff. I try not to. I just stay much in the traditional mode and the traditional / contemporary mode.
My guest right now is Cindy Funk from WYSO's The Deer Green Place. It's unfortunately not on our dial, but we'll put up a link to Cindy's show, and we'll have other links to the Dublin Irish Fest, to Mick Broderick's band. And Cindy, I want to thank you for coming in and talking to us today.
Oh, thank you very much. And you can get us on streaming, so my show, so you can do that. And thanks very much for having me, Eric. It's been a good time.
Absolutely. And we're going to be right back, but I want to play a brief clip. A good murder ballad is one of my favorite types of music. And Cindy's band, Sweetwater, did a great version of Knoxville Girl. So let's take a quick listen.
With her blood did flow, I took her by her golden curls, I throwed her round and round, I throwed her into the river that flows through Knoxville town. Go there, you Knoxville girl, this dark and stormy night. Go there, little Knoxville girl, you'll never be my wife.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French. The Fashion Meets Music Festival gets underway at the end of this month in downtown Columbus, and it'll be a three-day event featuring local and national musicians as well as fashion designers. The festival's coverage has been dominated lately by a controversy surrounding their choice of now-dropped headliner R. Kelly. And joining us now to talk about this is arts and entertainment reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Kevin Joy. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
And also joining us is the communications director for Fashion Meets Music Festival, Melissa Dixon. Thanks for coming in.
No, thank you for having us.
Kevin, let's start with you. So you've been writing about the R. Kelly controversy and the dropping of R. Kelly for a while. Can you just give us a brief overview as to why this headliner was so controversial?
Sure. Well, the announcement of R. Kelly as the headliner, I think, drew some immediate criticism based on the R&B singer's past alleged misdeeds, namely charges that he was acquitted of in 2008 regarding a sex tape that he was allegedly in. However, he had been performing at a number of festivals prior to this, so it came about. What was most explosive was a 2013 interview that Chicago Sun-Times reporter Jim DeRogatis had done with The Village Voice. That interview went viral last December after he had done some of these festivals, and I think it just kind of refreshed people's minds into what had happened. Some of these charges are more than a decade old, so a lot of listeners and fans of his may have been unaware of what he allegedly did. And that, I think, stirred up a lot of more recent criticism. So this was really the first big booking he had had since those allegations were re-brought up in December.
So with the allegations, a lot of people are familiar with the video that involved an underage girl. And for the most part, a lot of the media has kind of turned it into a joke. Dave Chappelle had a big skit about it. But
South Park.
But that's not all, like, his acquittal is not all that his opponents were talking about. I mean, what else deeper were they up in an uproar about in Columbus?
Sure. Well, the Chicago Sun-Times, in their years of investigations, had also uncovered about 24 lawsuits from other underage women, most of them underage. These cases were ultimately sealed, but sources had told the paper that he had paid off a number of girls in exchange for silence. One of the cases included an underage woman who was driven by his associates for an abortion. There was another girl who was from a low-income neighborhood who was mysteriously in the south of France for 6 months when they tried to reach her. So, you know, how would a person do a trip like that, supposedly? And I think the big one, too, which a lot of people may have forgotten about, was his annulled marriage to Aaliyah, the R&B singer who he allegedly married at 15 when he was, I believe, 24. That was annulled shortly after their marriage. But certainly that's something that has plagued him as well.
You mentioned that he's been on other festivals, the Pitchfork Music Festival and Bonnaroo. Why do you think that there wasn't the outcry from the community there that there was here?
You know, it's hard to say. Certainly, I know that in the case of Fashion Meets Music, this was a ticketed event for a specific concert. So people going to Pitchfork, going to Bonnaroo, were going to go anyway. They may have not been necessarily deterred by a single artist on the bill. That being said, there's a lot of people who seem to listen to him kind of as a cartoon character. I mean, they may or may not know about his alleged crimes, but they see him as kind of this bedroom Lothario. All of his songs are very theatrical, very sexual. And if you didn't quite know the extent of what he allegedly did, you know, you may go for the shock value or the entertainment value. I know that, again, to go back to DeRogatis, had said he wrote a pretty critical post on Pitchfork last summer that, quote, saying the vicarious thrill of seeing this guy play a character, but knowing it's not just a character. I mean, you know, some sick person going to see something like that. But, you know, he's a savvy marketer, and he's an entertainer in some regard that I think people, whether or not they know the extent of what he did, could be drawn to for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Melissa Dixon, why did Fashion Meets Music Festival finally decide to drop R. Kelly?
Yeah, we obviously, since we made that announcement on June 25th, had really heard a lot of different, I guess, conversations brewing in the community. And with the recent dropping of two of our bands, and also looking and hearing what our sponsors were telling us, and, you know, looking at the community and really hearing what they were saying, we really wanted to let their voices be heard and do what was right for Columbus. You know, the festival wants to be around for a long time and really get its foot in the right door. And, you know, the best way for us to do that is obviously, you know, doing what's right by the city and listening to the community going forward.
Was there a final straw?
I think it was Friday, before we obviously made the announcement, this past Monday, that we just decided internally, that it was the best decision to go forward. And we obviously had to work with his management team, and his publicist to really make that decision to make the announcement on Monday.
Yeah, you mentioned, the community was speaking out, and especially social media was ablaze with all kinds of stuff. Do you think you waited too long? Or how long does a decision like this even have to take?
You know, I mean, from the very first, I guess, negative press that we did receive, you know, we were talking internally. It's not that we were, you know, turning our heads and closing our eyes and just kind of not listening. You know, as a festival, we obviously want to put, you know, Columbus, especially in terms of what we're trying to do for the city and fashion and music, and really help it gain the attention that it wants to and putting a festival like this on the map. But I think looking at that and really trying to make a decision, we felt that to be able to execute the way that we wanted to on the festival, we had to make this decision.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and I'm talking to Melissa Dixon from the Fashion Meets Music Festival and Kevin Joy from the Columbus Dispatch. Melissa, how were ticket sales for the event? Since it was a ticketed event, has...
For R. Kelly?
Yeah.
I mean, when we when tickets went on sale, I believe following, I believe it was June 30th and July 1st, to be honest, working with his agent and working with his ticketing structure, ticket sales were right on track. It was an urban influence who obviously buys a lot of his tickets. And looking at their buying patterns and looking at what he's done in other concerts, we weren't too far off.
With so much of the coverage being focused on the R. Kelly controversy, it just makes me think you've got so much else planned in your 3-day festival. So tell us some other stuff that you have planned.
No, I appreciate that. You know, the festival itself, unlike other music festivals where you truly have to have a ticketed, you know, opportunity to go, and it's usually $79, $89. Fashion Meets Music Festival offers something that's for everyone. We truly have taken the festival structure and giving you the opportunity to go at no cost. We do have upsell opportunities, which include our after parties, which are taking place in both the Short North and the Arena District at 9 different venues. Those start from 11 p.m. till 2:30 in the morning each night. And then we have our incredible VIP opportunity that would be $250 access all weekend or $99 each day. So it really gives you that opportunity, as well as our retail marketplace, where you'll really be able to kind of see and get more intimate with the fashion and the runways and the designers and the educational components that we're really excited about offering to the community.
And what is the link between fashion and music?
I think, you know, looking at music festivals and, you know, just the history of fashion and music, they've always inspired each other. And when we really wanted to put a festival together here in Columbus, with Columbus recently becoming the third largest city in terms of fashion designers and retail employees, it made sense.
What other bands do you have playing?
Over the course of the weekend, some of our additional headliners include OAR, Circus Survive, Newfound Glory, Cold War Kids, Parachute. So we have a really strong lineup that I really truly feel that Columbus should be proud of, and we're very proud of giving them to the community.
Just a second ago, you mentioned some educational components. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, we're doing some unique educational components throughout the weekend of the festival. On Friday, we have a fashion panel that will include a lot of different unique fashion headliners here in Columbus, whether it's from one of the major retail anchors, whether it's from someone in the Short North on the retail side. CCAD is involved in that as well. On the music panel side, we're also putting together different music panels, both local and more regional and national, really trying to get spokespeople involved and speaking about some industry facing topic issues that I think would really be influential during the course of the weekend.
Well, this is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and we're talking to Melissa Dixon from the Fashion Meets Music Festival. And Melissa, how is CCAD involved?
CCAD is going to be involved year one in terms of educational components, like I just mentioned. We're also looking to have some of their recent graduate students putting together some fashion shows that will be presented during the course of the weekend.
And this festival a lot of times when I think of festivals, I think of sort of a big gathering, but you're encompassing a larger part of the city. How much behind the scenes legwork does that take to plan a festival of this scope?
That's a great question. The festival organizers, we've been working on this for the past 18 months. So looking at going forward and the true execution of it, we truly have around 13 to 15 key people that have been exhausting hours day in, day out. Now that we're 30 days out, it's all hands on deck and it's 7 days a week. So
our phone number is 614-292-8513. This is All Sides Weekend. Melissa, tell me about the fashion designer's role. Is this sort of like a Project Runway situation?
You know, not necessarily. What we really wanted to do was pull from local. With it being a Columbus-based festival, we really wanted to give some of our local designers the opportunity to showcase. We do have, we're very excited to bring Althea Harper, who is from the Dayton, Ohio area. She was on Project Runway. Kelly Martin from Anti-Label and Alternative Fashion Mob, she's involved with the festival. So it's not more so that kind of Project Runway feel, but it's more of along the lines of really kind of showcasing those designers and giving Columbus the opportunity to actually buy their goods. So typical fashion shows that occur throughout the city of Columbus, you see the fashion, it walks on the runway, and it leaves. Fashion Meets Music Festival really gives you the opportunity of seeing that fashion live and then going to their booth and actually purchasing it and taking it home with you. So it gives you the instant gratification that I know a lot of people out there are really excited to experience.
Kevin Joy, how does Fashion Meets Music compare to other festivals?
Well, I think some of the elements she just spoke about, you know, you have retail textile music. You know, most festivals are pretty much music-based or music and food-based. You know, I think about urban festivals. I think of Forecastle in Louisville, which just happened. I think about Summerfest in Milwaukee on a much greater scale, Lollapalooza happening this weekend. Columbus has never really had anything like that in terms of a multi-day. Well, we have Rock on the Range at Crew Stadium, but in terms of being in the city, not so much. So I think it's an intriguing idea. I think making use of the Park Street and Short North venues kind of South by Southwest style is a great idea, especially combining a lot of the local element, a lot of local bands mixed in with some of the national names. Great idea. Urban camping, is that still going on?
Urban camping is still definitely going on. You're more than welcome to come down there and camp for the weekend.
I'm thinking about it, yeah.
Yeah, you should.
So certainly I think it's a step in the right direction to have a festival of some kind in the city because we certainly have the infrastructure for it. I mean, I'm not sure. I think Bunbury as well in Cincinnati comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Explain to me urban camping.
I think I'll let her do that.
Yeah, I'll take that one from Kevin. Urban camping truly is what we wanted to offer with this festival. Camping's a very popular item with all music festivals, and Nationwide Realty was actually a great partner with us in taking the former casino site behind Huntington Baseball Park and really transforming it into a campground environment. So we partner with Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and we're really turning into and transforming that area into a camping opportunity for our festival goers to enjoy all weekend long.
Kevin, what bands are you excited to see?
Well, you know, I just saw Beyonce in Cincinnati, so I'm kind of excited to see Michelle Williams, see how she can step up things. To be honest, I've never seen OAR in concert. They're Columbus guys. They're here every summer. I think a free show by them might be, you know, pretty good. As I said, I do like the local element. There's some really good names that I think are sort of unsung, even in our own town. Angela Purley, The Receiver, Kid Runner, Copyright. I mean, bands that are playing these after parties that I think, especially when some of them are grouped, even diversity by genre in the same lineup is pretty neat. I like Future Islands, Local Natives, which are, I believe, both after-party shows.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So.
Well, I want to thank both of my guests, Kevin Joy from the Columbus Dispatch and Melissa Dixon from Fashion Meets Music Festival. We will be right back with more All Sides Weekend. We'll be right back. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm your host, Eric French, and we just heard music from some of our next guests. They have been in the news lately for their stance against the Fashion Meets Music Festival's choice of the now-removed headliner. With the announcement of R. Kelly's involvement in the event, several local groups and organizations decided to drop out of the Fashion Meets Music Festival. That included the electropop duo Damn the Witch Siren, who is in studio now. And it also spurred the creation of a new festival that aims to celebrate women as a viable part of the Columbus community. Joining us now from that festival, which is called FemFest, is Reagan Buchanan. Reagan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Krista Botcher and Nathan Photos from the band Damn the Witch Siren. Thanks for
Hello.
Coming in, guys.
Hi, thank you.
Let's start with Krista and Nathan. You're also known by your stage names, Bobby Kitten and Z Wolf, respectively. As the Columbus community grows and makes a bigger name for itself in the arts and music scene, festivals like Fashion Meets Music or Independence Day are popping up, and even some of the established festivals like HomFest just continue to grow and grow. And platforms like that really give local artists a chance to put their music in front of a lot of people. So I'm just wondering, how tough was it for you to make a decision to pull out of the Fashion Meets Music Festival, you know, given that you would have gotten a lot of exposure out of it?
Well, we deliberated over it a lot, actually. We had a lot of friends of ours that, you know, talked to us about our career. They're like, this is a great opportunity for you. You're a small band. And we were really excited about it. We were so excited to announce it the morning that we were allowed to. But that's when we also found about R. Kelly headlining it. And I think, like, it just took over our feelings about him headlining it. And it still took us about a week to decide to pull out of the festival after we had initially announced that we were considering it if they were still going to have R. Kelly headline.
And we mentioned in our last segment that R. Kelly, when he headlined other large festivals, the cities didn't have the same outcry as Columbus. Why do you think Columbus was unique?
Well, I think that we have a strong sense of community. We do great things. All of our local musicians and artists are always doing charity benefits. We have one of the biggest, like, gay pride festivals. I don't know. We're just all about community and
equality.
Inequality. Inequality. And that's one of the things that, you know, like feminism and equal rights and, you know, just standing up for not having R. Kelly be the main head of this festival to represent our city. Our city stands for so much more than that. And just, yeah.
Yeah, when St. Seneca dropped, they put a blog post up that compared a festival headliner to, you know, a sailing ship and the identification thereof.
Yeah.
Let's talk for a minute now about FemFest. Reagan, can you give us just a brief overview of what FemFest is and why it's so important for Columbus?
What it is we are a grassroots organization made up of about four people that wanted to put together a festival that celebrated women musicians in our local scene. And I think it's important that people see that women are creative and women are musicians and women can participate in the way that in kind of like a male-dominated field. I think sometimes women get overlooked, and we wanted to show that we could put together a festival that said that wasn't true, that everybody, or said that, you know, that women can participate.
I know the festival planning can take months on end, and you've got weeks.
Right.
How do you throw something this big together?
Actually, the thing is, I'm in two local bands, and I've played with many of the bands that we've asked, and it's just actually from being here for so long and being a part of the community and forming these connections and being able to call people and ask. And the thing is, our charity, the Ohio Alliance to End Sexual Violence, that really drew people in, and people really wanted to help. So that was like a big factor in people saying yes very quickly. It's taken a lot of organization, and it's been kind of hard because we're organizing everything at the same time. But everybody in the community has been so helpful and wanted to reach out and do something for us so much that it's made it a lot easier on us.
We talked about how Fashion Meets Music is taking kind of like a South by Southwest approach of taking over like a part of the city rather than just a large campground-esque situation. Is that, are you taking on something like that, or will you be centrally located?
Actually, we're using several venues in town, so it'll be kind of spread out. And our next step is to, we're working with some local businesses to see what they can offer, whether it be a discount on sales, or if they wanted to, you know, host a panel or something like that. That's our step that we're kind of working on next. So it will be, it will not be anyway on the scale of South by Southwest, but it'll be whatever we can get done in the amount of time that we have, like business participation, local participation. And we think it'll be great because, like I said, people have already, you know, expressed that they wanted to be involved.
A lot of the reason, or at least what's being reported now, is a lot of the reason that R. Kelly was dropped was because of the large social media backlash. What social media tactics did you use, and you know, how else did you get your voice out there?
For FemFest or to to show disagreement about R. Kelly?
Both.
I wrote some on the, you know, I use social media a little bit on their Facebook page, on the FMMF's Facebook page, but I wasn't involved so much in that. But the community of musicians and different people who are in that scene, I saw a lot of people standing up and, you know, trying to, you know, force the issue. And then for FemFest, honestly, we kind of had a lot of our friends just, you know, spread the word. And whenever anybody heard, like, we used Facebook and we're using Twitter, social media. But also people are talking, like, and it wasn't very hard to get a lot of interest. So we're not really using so much tactics, but, like, pretty much we're kind of just telling everybody what it is. And then we're starting to get the schedule solidified. So we have some bands to show everybody that we've just been posting, and it's been a good response. So.
And yeah, you have a social media presence and you have a website, and we'll put links to all of that up on WSU.org after the show. How are the proceeds from FemFest going to be handled?
All of the proceeds are going to go to the Ohio Alliance to End Sexual Violence. So that's where they're going to go. Like I said, we're a grassroots organization, and we've put this together with absolutely no money, but we're really happy about that. Their website is www.oaesv.org. And if anyone wants to participate in just donating to them, that would be like our greatest wish.
Yeah. What about people that want to, maybe somebody hasn't heard of FemFest and wants to get involved? How would you suggest they get involved?
Oh, we have an email. Actually, you can email us at femfestcolumbus@gmail.com. If you just, you know, email us there and see, tell us what you want to help us out with. The thing is, there we have had so much offers for help, and we don't have enough time to, like, utilize everybody. So I'm kind of scared we're going to get more. Because, I mean, we have, like, everybody has just reached out. Like, we've had photographers reach out. We've had people who want to do panels. We've had comedians. Like, a lot of, like, we got, like, Columbus Burlesque reached out to us, and they said they wanted to do something. So we're trying to incorporate what we can. Pretty soon we're going to have to settle down and put a schedule out. But hopefully a lot of the local businesses will be able to just add on as they come. But the main events are pretty much gonna need to be done. Sorry.
And one of the events is Damn the Witch Siren is gonna play FemFest. Krista and Nathan, why is your involvement in FemFest so important to you?
I think that they're trying to do something really great, and we were already, when we knew that we were bowing out of Fashion Meets Music Festival, we were already planning on doing some sort of benefit. So this sort of just happened around everything, and so that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's cool because, like, we had some other artists coming to us and asking us how they could contribute money. Even artists that still wanted to be in the festival, they're like, well, what if we donate our money? And then some of the other artists did. I believe there was an artist, Mary Lynn, she announced on Facebook she's playing, that she was going to still play the festival, but donate all the money that she makes off of her merch and donate that to, I don't know exactly where, but it was for rape victims and...
Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing that as well. We don't know when we're playing FemFest yet, but when we do, all of our merch proceeds are going to go to the Ohio Alliance as well.
Well, let's talk about your music for a while. I have a track queued up. Let's take a quick listen to the song Glass. That's Damn the Witch Siren's track, Glass, and that really brought up some memories of me being 10 years old playing Nintendo with my brother.
That's the idea, yeah. So
are those really Nintendo samples in there?
Yes, sir.
How do you put your songs together?
It's kind of a conglomeration. But Nathan actually produces all of our music. He's been producing for about 18 years, and he's really great. But we have lots of apps that we use. We use iPad apps, and actually our first album we mostly wrote on our iPhone with different musical apps, and we thought it was a really refreshing approach to writing music. We'd come up with beats, drum sequencers, and then it just kind of like, it's all about layering, and I would just like sometimes just record a vocal track, and then we would layer different things, and we have tons of Nintendo samples, which kind of keeps it really fun. When we play live, we have them on our MPD, which is a little sampler, and we'll just play them and shoot them off and like fireworks. It's really fun. But yeah, do you want to, you should add, I mean, anyway.
So you produce everything yourself. Is this something that you're doing on your own? Do you go into recording studios and do it?
No, the things we've done so far have been at home, but... Not to get into too many details, but we're hoping to open a studio soon. So we'll see how that goes.
That's our next goal.
And I also saw on your website that you have a number of videos. Tell me about your music videos.
They are self-produced. Glass, the song, we actually did a music video for that, and that was done with a green screen in our living room, which was kind of messy and really fun.
That's part of the charm, though. I mean, all our stuff is very DIY. And so our videos are too, and I think they reflect that. There's kind of a grittiness and a polished thing going on with them. And that's kind of like our music too, I think.
We should also mention that we filmed all of our music videos on our iPhones. And we think it's really cool just to, the new technology, we've utilized it a lot. Someday we'll get really nice cameras.
I haven't seen you perform live yet, but I did watch all of your videos at my office laptop this week with headphones, and after a big mug of coffee and watching those videos, I was really amped up, but also a little confused. I saw that you list a video projector as your third band member.
Yes, we do.
Tell me how all that factors into your live shows.
We have a couple softwares that we use live, and like we run our vocals and our guitar and keyboards and samplers all into the computer, and it's very malleable. And then we have another software that we use to sync up our visuals, like our music videos and other various visuals, and it syncs to our music as we play. So
it's just the idea was, we were playing this kind of like crazy hectic music at times, and we wanted to add another, we're very visual people. Every time we write a song, it's all about colors or we see videos. And so that's why we get ideas to do these things, even though we don't have the money, but it's another way to implement kind of another experience for people to come to our shows. So
this is All Sides Weekend, and we're talking to the band Damn the Witch Siren. And we're also talking to Regan Buchanan from the FemFest. Krista, when I hear you talk about your art having so many visual influences, it makes me wonder, do you see your music as art under a greater umbrella, or do you segment your music by itself?
Oh, I guess I haven't really thought about that. I guess it's just all kind of, I don't really know how to answer that. It's kind of like everything. Music is everything to me, so I feel like it I don't even know. It fills out all of, like, creativity. That's kind of a big question.
It's just kind of what you do?
Yeah, it's just kind of an extension of ourselves, and the further we can extend ourselves and plug ourselves into different ways to express ourselves, and that can be part of our band. That's just, I mean, that and wanting to write pop music.
Yeah, when I listen, the first thing I think is, well, you've got all kinds of weird influences going on visually, and some of the sounds and themes are dark and kind of weird, which I also love. But the main thing that hits me is it just sounds like fun music.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You also did an album of 80s covers.
We did.
why do covers?
That actually was spawned on because we were invited to play an 80s night live show, and we were supposed to do, with a bunch of other bands, we're all doing 80s covers. So we just went the whole nine yards and made a quick EP. We recorded in a couple weeks.
Just recorded a quick album. For
We love 80s music, and just, you know, we're trying to keep busy all the time, as busy as we can. So.
And yeah. Oh no, we talked to, like, our biggest influence is music from the 80s, so it kind of worked out perfect too. So.
Let's take a quick listen. I think my favorite track on your 80s cover recording was the Peter Gabriel song.
Oh really?
Thanks.
That's awesome. I'm on my way.
That's Damn the Witch Siren covering Peter Gabriel's Big Time. This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and I'm talking to Damn the Witch Siren. So I understand that you also have a new album.
Yes.
Tell me about your new album.
Well, it's called Super Delicious. and yeah, it's just, it's very, it has kind of a dark pop theme. We worked really hard on it, and I don't know. It's kind of, it has like some ethereal moments in it. It has some kind of like hip hop esque. How would you explain it?
You're doing good.
Am I? Okay.
You talked about using technology, you know, iPads and iPhones to create your work. How are you using that to distribute? Did you actually make CDs?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
Okay, so you've still got some of the antiquated technology.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of CDs anymore, but we wanted some sort of hard copy. And we made tapes of our first album, and people either are really excited and they buy the tape or they laugh at us. So we thought we should probably put this one on CD.
Yeah, I saw the tapes are making a comeback too, kind of.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about that one yet.
Right. Just nostalgia. Again,
yeah.
You know,
it's
the Game Boy sounds, the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I understand you're also playing this weekend.
Yes, we are playing. We are doing Live at the Garden Theater. We're playing Saturday at 10 p.m. at the main stage. It's kind of a little weekend, like a gallery hop festival, and they have tons of artists. I believe the Up All Nights are playing after us, and they have comedy and art. They're going to have gallery showings of different artists around Columbus, so that's pretty cool.
And you don't have your set scheduled yet for the Femme Fest, but that will happen later this month.
I don't know. Do we?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we do. We do. We have that information.
We know that Damn the Witch Siren is going to play Sunday the 31st at Little Rock.
We're going to be playing with DJ Moxie and Funerals.
Mm-hmm. And then Columbus Burlesque is going to make an appearance there, too.
And Burlesque.
And FemFest, again, is a Columbus musicians community reaction to the Fashion Meets Music Festival. I want to thank all of my guests for being here. I want to thank Regan Buchanan for coming here from FemFest. Thanks so much for taking some time to come in.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank Krista Botcher and Nathan Photos from the band Damn the Witch Siren. Thanks for coming
Thanks,
in, guys.
Eric.
Thank you for having us.
This is All Sides Weekend. I'm Eric French, and I want to also thank Ann Fisher and her staff for helping me produce the show. I want to thank Emmy Beach for all of her work on this show, and our line producer, Amy Jurevich. This is All Sides Weekend. We'll be back later this month.